Welcome in, everybody, to another episode of the Talking Calcio podcast here on the Game Nashville Sports Network. I'm your host, Nick Frazier, alongside Claudio Villalobos. How about that, Claudio? My Spanish is sounding pristine.
We were just talking about you, about that. Having fun using you as a reference today at the press conference. I'll tell you in a second.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you. I'm glad I was used in some form or fashion at the press conference. Recording this on a Tuesday, the day Nashville SC had their preview for their press conference going into their Wednesday night game against the New York Red Bulls, the former Eastern Conference champions of last season. Nashville SC coming off a 2-1 victory at home, Claudio, against the Charlotte FC. An incredible game, honestly. It was very back and forth. Some people may look at it as a dull game. It was very, you could say, chess matchy worthy, because just both teams, it was basically who could make the mistake first, and then that's when the floodgates kind of opened a little bit. I think for Nashville, they understood that the assignment for them was to kind of make sure they don't allow Charlotte to get past their back line when it came to any sort of form of counterattack. I think that was one of the questions that I asked BJ Callahan after the game Saturday night. You know, what was the key as to why Andy Nahar didn't, you know, pressure the ball into a form of a counterattack? And he said, listen, we just don't want to be susceptible to giving Charlotte the ball back if we were to turn it over, and then us being susceptible to a counterattack. Because he said, Charlotte, they attack with purpose. And I've mentioned that to you in weeks past about, you know, Charlotte, they may not have a lot of shots, but their shots on goal almost matches their amount of shots because they understand what they're going to do with the ball.
No question about it, Nick. I'm going to say hello first to all of our listeners and thank them for having the patience of listening to what we have to say here. A couple of things that come to mind. When I was finishing my coverage of the game in Atlanta, I talk about three things. You know, how many times a team plays a very good game, which I think the team did in Charlotte there at the Bank of America Stadium, especially the first half, and they came out losing 3-1, wasn't it? 3-1.
Mm-hmm.
If you just read the score, you say maybe Nashville was not even present. Actually, Nashville were present most of the game. They still lost big. Now they come to Atlanta and they play a very good, sound game for most minutes. They handed it to Atlanta, and they still couldn't beat them 1-1. If you ask me to choose, perhaps between the three games, in terms of what you look, in terms of what you get in your sight by watching or following the games, I would say that the game here against Charlotte was not the most provoking one. It wasn't the most beautiful game that we've seen this team play, but perhaps the best in terms of how they managed to actually get the victory, which they couldn't on those two past games. So, you know, if you're a fan, I'm sure, you know, all fans, all of us would like to see a team play well and beat the opponent. But if you're going to have to choose in between that and actually just winning the game, well, anybody will take the victory. And that's what happened this time. And yeah, you were right, Nick, because if you remember well, there were two opportunities at the end of the game here in Nashville. If what's the name of this guy? The guy from Israel. I forgot his name.
For Charlotte or Nashville?
For Charlotte.
Is it Leo Banda?
Yeah. Him. He had two chances there. One Willis responded, and the other one, he just blew it. He was by himself on the outside. Mm-hmm. He had the tide right there. So that means BJ was right. He's a dangerous team all the way to the final whistle.
They don't give up. They really are.
And so that's what makes Nashville victory against Charlotte a very, very good one.
Now, my big question going into, you know, this next game, now that the Charlotte game's out of the way, Nashville, again, winning 2-1 against Charlotte FC this past weekend. Nashville SC, it's their fourth straight home win against Charlotte, that is. They're outscoring opponents, including the U.S. Open Cup, 18-6. That's pretty incredible. You know, BJ mentioned a few press conferences ago that this team, they have the, I guess, identity and mentality of scoring 50 goals this season. That is a objective of theirs. I mean, they're almost over halfway there. They're just right under the halfway mark. But it's impressive to see this team scoring on all cylinders in all phases of the game. If it's coming from corner kicks, coming from outside the box, coming from midfield production up to the very top with Sam Surridge. But yeah, Nashville going up against a very, I guess you could say, high press team in New York Red Bulls. New York Red Bulls, they're another team. Actually, let's put it this way. Nashville and New York are the only two teams in MLS right now that have scored 7 goals in a match. Nashville, you know, scoring 7 goals against the Chicago Fire back in April, 7-2. And then most recently, May the 10th, LA Galaxy. I'm losing my words there. The New York Red Bulls scored 7 goals against the LA Galaxy, 7-0 there. So that's kind of what Nashville's coming into. They're coming into a team that's coming in hot. They understand what the assignment is, and I'm intrigued. The thing that I'm intrigued about is Nashville's midfield pairings. That we always talk about this week in and week out, but this week specifically because Nashville has a midweek game. I'm curious to see how BJ, I guess, handles the stamina of certain players. We all know that these games, especially going up against a team like Charlotte that's very good defensively, and also New York, they're very good defensively and they're good with the press. I'm intrigued to see how BJ handles the midfield depth. I wonder if he's going to possibly do a Yazbek-Brugman pairing and or an Eddie Tagseth-Brian Acosta pairing. In my opinion, I think it'll be Eddie Tagseth and Gaston Brugman, primarily because I believe Patrick Yazbek took a lot of knocks in the Charlotte FC game. There was one right before the half where somebody shot a ball and Yazbek slid and it hit the backside of his lower half, and it did not look comforting to him coming off the field. So I don't know. That's one thing that's kind of torn me up, is just to figure out who the midfield pairing is, because we all know this specific style of offense and defense, the formation BJ runs, it is very taxing on the midfielders, whoever is in the middle.
Right. And you know, well, you said something very well, a lot of stuff that is I agree with, of course. But, you know, the fact that this team is very sound defensively, that creates a problem right there. But I believe, just like most football games, soccer games, the definition would be in the middle of the field, especially on this one. On this particular one, that's what makes him so tough. That's what makes the Red Bull so tough. I mean, it's hard to actually win the middle of the half. I'm just thinking that this time around, having the speeder, these workhorses there, the four of them, which I think he's gonna come in with the four of them already again, Schaffelberg, Tagseth, Jasbeck, and Will. And, you know, those guys working like the way they do together is very tough. We said it before, for any team. So, and that has to happen. In other words, if that doesn't happen, New York will have a good shot of coming out with a victory here. But if Nashville makes these guys go for the longest minutes of the game, finally, one of the things that, I don't know if you agree with me Nick and the listeners, but one of the things that we haven't talked about Nashville is that it is a team that, how do I say this, runs out the energy on the rivals, on the opponent.
It seems like their stamina is gone by the time they get to them.
Yeah, that's exactly what happens. And so, you know, you have Daxet, Mule, even Schaffelberg, and now
Yazbek.
I'm missing one. Well, those guys, they run for 100 minutes, no problem. This is that you can find. Usually find one guy or maybe two in a team, but the four of them doing it, that's stress heavy. Now, would BJ surprise us making a switch there in the middle? I don't know. Maybe he might have something up his sleeve. Up his lip, maybe, but I would say the fair bet is that he's going to go with those four guys, and they're going to try to outrun the opposition right in the middle.
Yeah, I agree to that, and you make a good point too about the fatigue aspect of this, because let's go back to the first time Nashville SC took on the New York Red Bulls earlier this season. That lineup was very different. I would say very different, but there was a slight difference to it. Sam Surridge and Mukhtar were up top, right? Moyle was on the left. And then the middle pairing for the midfield, that is, was Wyatt Meyer and Matthew Corcoran, which is the youngster group that I'd call them the future group. Let's put it that way. And outright, where you'd normally see Jacob Schaffelberg on the right side, it was Eddie Tagseth. And I think at that point in the season, I honestly think that BJ Callahan was experimenting to see where he could put Eddie Tagseth, because I think BJ knew that he had the stamina, he had the endurance where Eddie Tagseth could take up majority of the field. And I think once he realized how good he is in game with the ball at his feet, that was the early season adjustment. Like, you know what? This is our midfielder. This is my true midfielder.
Didn't it look to you, Nick, that in that particular game, you're describing very well what happened. Didn't it look to you that because of the fact, maybe you used the word experimenting, I would say that he probably didn't completely know what Eddie can give him. Didn't it look to you, one now, when in hindsight, that that Eddie looked like he was inside a cage?
Yes. Yes, I felt like he wasn't in his natural position when he was playing outright.
Because he moves everywhere.
Yes.
He's really, where's his position? I don't know. He could be anywhere.
I mean,
you see him up front, you see him in the back, you see him on the side, you see him on the other side, you see him in the pockets right there behind Zurich. You see him in the pockets in front of the front defenders. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just everywhere. So
that just goes to show you, it gives more credit to BJ Callahan for understanding how to adjust on the fly, that is, when it goes through the season. But also, it gives more credit to the players that they've recruited and that they've brought in. Because you look at a guy like, and I will stress this till the cows come home, Claudio. Wyatt Meyer is an absolute gem of a player. Young player, can play left back, center back, defensive midfield. He did. I did hear that. He's now the left back backup to Daniel Lovitz because of Taylor Washington's knee injury that will keep him out for a bit of time. But we'll get into more of the injury information there, Claudio, because there was something I found that was kind of funny near the end where BJ Callahan was speaking his Callanese, is what I'm going to call it. It's his it's his vocabulary, his language, Callanese. I think I have the good translation for all that. But
Callanese.
back to the main point of this, looking at, you know, the first matchup to New York Red Bulls up to now and talking about Eddie Tagseth, I just think the way BJ has adapted on the fly, just a lot of credit to him, a lot of credit to the players for versatility. And it just goes to show you that this team, especially, I guess, give credit to Mike Jacobs, because they want this team to succeed. And if you have versatility, that goes to show you don't have to just play a 4-2-2-2 or a 4-3-3. I mean, we saw it in the U.S. Open Cup. They played a traditional 4-3-3, and it was an attacking 4-3-3. Well, defensive midfield.
Defensive 4-3-3. Defensive midfield, yeah.
So, I mean, that just goes to show you that this team can do it all. And that's kind of what you have to have if you're trying to win championships. And especially U.S. Open Cup, I think they could make a deep run at, but especially the MLS playoffs. That's where you're going to really see the true colors of this team.
I believe so. I mean, and it's early, still early, to be honest. But the New York, the Red Bulls are not the best team they're going to face right now. But I guess in terms of what they do in the middle of the field, this is their true test. This is the true test, but because of several reasons. Nashville would be playing at the place that they feel obviously most comfortable at, which is the Jody's Park. This is the place where they win the most victories. This is the place where the team looks much better than anywhere else, for sure. Of course, this is just given. This is just a given. However, the part that I'm intrigued to see is if Nashville can actually put all those three together against a team that is so well established. Especially with his coaching style. I mean, it's a team that has history in terms of his dynamics in the middle, his tactics. I mean, their tactics right there. They're always not the same, but they're well. What do you say this? They're profoundly stated in their
Well-versed. Yeah, they're well-versed.
Correct. It's not one of those teams that you find every year trying to figure out how they're going to face this particular tournament. No, they always been like this, so they know. And the BJ said it very well. Even Alex Will said it very well this day in the press conference today. This is a team that knows how they play. They've been like that forever. So this is a true test, in my opinion, and that's the reason why they made it so far in the last MLS Cup last season.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we were not expecting them to get there. But that part, the fact that they manage so well what they do tactically, their dynamics, they're already so much just studied already. It's like that guy, I'm going to compare this to a friend of mine. I better not talk about his name. But one of those guys that are always good at taking courses. They excel in anything they want to study.
Yeah.
Well, I compare this team to something like that. No matter who comes in, the player they bring in has to adapt, and he adapts to that particular style. And that's why you never see this team different. Mm-hmm. They play the same everywhere.
They really do. And I will say this too, Claudio, talking about teams that adapt well, New York, another team that adapts well. And to the point of that being said, at the beginning of the season when Nashville played them, they were playing a three at the back, if you remember correctly. And now, this past couple weeks, they're playing a four at the back. A 4-2-3-1 in some regard. Some may say a 4-3-3. I mean, it just depends on how you look at it. But that combination between Forsberg and Choupo-Moting, that's dangerous.
Like, that's dangerous right there.
That's something to me that stood out just looking at just the preview for this game. I want to know how Jason Palacios is going to respond, because we've talked about how he can be a true leader on the field, but not vocally. This is going to be a challenge for him, because I think he's going to have to use his language for this type of game. He's going to have to be vocal in that back line. And maybe Jack Mayer is the other guy that has to help him out with that. But primarily, Jason Palacios, I think vocally, has to step up on the field tomorrow.
This is one of those games where the two center backs, I have to be, I don't know how, because I mean, the fact is, and we already talked about it, that even though Jason is doing well and learning his Spanish, I mean, his language and everything else, he's not there in order to actually communicate as good as it's supposed to be inside the field. But now, I mean, I'm just hoping that in this particular week, we already know that him and Nahar can communicate because they speak Spanish. But I'm just hoping that because of the guy that they need to face there in the middle, Mayer and Jason has accomplished that particular communication that might not be included, not might be full sentences, but those few key words in terms of what Jason needs to know, maybe when Mayer screams at him or whatever, And that will make a big difference, because otherwise, this guy, I mean, he's a real deal.
He really is. I mean, Choupo-Moting had two goals last game, and Forsberg, I mean, this guy had two goals as well. Out of the seven goals, those two shared four of them. I mean, it's incredible how these guys, they produce at a high level still. Both have had great careers in Europe, and, you know, coming to the MLS, I mean, you're going to just continue that greatness. So
that's why my first question today for BJ was about Forsberg, because I mean, in order to kind of put in a maybe a funny way who Forsberg is today, this is let me put it this way: this is Eddie Taxett veteran when he becomes a veteran.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, well, more mature Eddie Taxett.
More mature. I mean, and still he runs like crazy, back and forth. He's there. He's everywhere. I mean, Forsberg is very tough. He's like one of the best players in the league for sure.
I think the only thing Eddie Taxett is missing is a scoring boot is what he needs. He needs something to get back into the back of the net. That's one thing he needs. That would make him the true complete player for sure. I mean, I don't know
how he needs to score some.
He does. And out of this game going up against New York, I think we're going to see a little bit of regression. Obviously so. I don't think they're going to repeat their seven goals that they had against LA.
No. Neither team.
No. I'm thinking this game, it's kind of having the vibe of a 1-1 draw, maybe, or a 1-0 victory to either side. This is going to be a very similar game to Charlotte, in my opinion, but with more action. More possession back and forth, more, I'd say, loss of possession in the midfield. You know, last season, correct me if I'm wrong, Claudio, I try not to rephrase a lot of things or go back to last season, but Forsberg seemed pretty frustrated when he played Nashville. Nashville is sitting pretty, I'd say, defensive-minded, obviously, under Gary Smith, but correct me if I'm wrong. Am I thinking of that correctly? Am I remembering that right?
You're fully correct, and that has a name. I'm going to give you the name, Aníbal Godoy. Anibal Godoy got on his nerves all the time in every game. He knew how to push his buttons, the game, get his mind out of the game, getting mad, upset. And when you do that to Forsberg, because he doesn't like it because he knows they're trying to do that, so he cannot play. But Aníbal Godoy, I mean, greetings to him. He's one of the guys. When you want somebody do that stuff, Godoy is probably one of the best in the league, and that was the reason. Now, does Nashville have somebody like that today? I wouldn't say so, but maybe so. Well, you have.
I'm shaking my head. Yes.
Well,
we're already talking about him, Eddie Tankseth.
Well, but that, I mean, yeah, but not the same though. The problem with the big difference is Godoy will get in your nerves. He'll get you upset. Haxett will bite you, will bite your ankle, your legs, everything. You know, he's just like one of those, you know,
termites.
Termites. You know, those kinky dogs, whatever you gotta call them, that come to visit a family and he start biting your nail everywhere. That's the problem. I'm not sure he's facing a guy like Hatzik chasing him all over the place before. No, I don't think so.
So you don't think Eddie Tagseth is a chihuahua chasing after Emil Forsberg?
Yeah, that's exactly what I think.
Oh, okay.
It's just it's different. I haven't seen that yet. I'm just talking about, I have the reference of the Aníbal because I saw him doing that many times, several times.
Right.
I haven't seen that, but I wouldn't be surprised that's what's going to happen too.
Okay. That's fair.
But we'll see.
In my opinion, I think.
Now, could it be, I was going to ask you this question because you already said the kind of game you're expecting. Could it be that we have a boring game?
Yeah.
I mean, because it's going to be a dogfight in the middle.
I think so.
If no team wins the middle, we're going to have a.
I will say this.
We're going to be joining in the stadium, man.
We will be. I'll be walking to the coffee machine. Hey, hopefully the press box has a lot of cookies I can dip in the coffee to keep me awake. But
I hope not.
Let's hope not. I honestly have the idea.
There's a big possibility, though. It is.
Yeah. This game could really go either way when it comes to, you know, possession base. And to that point, I could see Nashville holding possession out of their back line and really trying to cycle the ball around to the left back and right back. In my opinion, I could easily see how Nashville played against, I think it was either.
But then New York doesn't bite. That's the problem. They're not the team that a lot of teams bite. That kind of what you're talking about. This team doesn't bite. They wait for you in the second line. They wait for you right there in the second line and they don't care. I mean, they actually give you some of possession back on the back right there. Where I mean, Jason's going to touch a lot of balls. Mayer, maybe Lovitz on the side, and Nahar. But once they cross the middle of the field, that's something else.
That's when they press you.
And they're very disciplined. They're very disciplined in that, especially in defense.
This is how I look at it. I think Nashville is going to tee up a lot of their passes. They'll be a little bit diagonal towards the flag, the corner flags. You know, when Jack Mayer gets in a groove, and I think Jason Palacios does a good job of setting him up this way, but there'll be a few balls where they'll pass to Jack on his right, and he'll loft those, I call them pings. He'll ping it to the far right corner or the far left corner, and either Daniel Lovitz or Andy Nahar will go after that, or if it'll go to Jacob Schaffelberg or Alex Mule, one of the two. And they've been known to do that in the past. Now, I don't say that's their primary offensive, I guess, weapon for this game. No, but I think it might be utilized a little more often than you think. Because when you do that, let's use an example. Say Jacob Schaffelberg, and we'll get into him in a little bit. Say Jacob Schaffelberg is the one receiving the ping from the back of line from Jack Mayer to Schaffelberg in the right corner, right? In that area. Now, say once Schaffelberg gets it, that allows Nahar to get that overlapping run. And then they tip it off to Nahar, and then you have either Hani or a midfielder trailing at the top of the box. And Nashville's been known to do that. They've been known to have those trailing runs at the top
and
of the box.
And very effectively.
Yes, very effectively.
Now, I'm going to take you from that exactly where you're standing with that play right there.
Okay.
I'm going to get, and this is just because to mention how careful the team needs to be when doing that transition. Because if Nashville loses the ball right there, this team, the Red Bulls, are not afraid to kick the ball over the back of our defenders, and though somebody's a couple guys will be waiting for that ball right there. It's part of their strategy. So if they actually collect that ball and they have Nahar and Lovitz up front like the way BJ likes it, then those two flanks are going to be open for a lot of this stuff that they like to do. Mm-hmm. And they already know that. They already know that. If we lose that ball right here, and Nahar is already up, and Love is on the other side, well, play it on the corners because they're not going to have people there. And that's when he had to be very careful, because that will cause Mayer to have to go to the flank, or Palacios on the other side. And that, and guess what? Who that leaves free in the middle?
Emil Forsberg and Choupo-Moting. Yep.
Yes, sir.
But also, you got to remember this too, Claudio. When Nashville does bring up either one or the other, if it's Lovitz or Nahar, they normally drop one of their midfielders, and normally it's been Yazbek. Normally, Yazbek drops into that right back form, and then you have Nahar kind of transition as he makes that overlapping run. He then becomes that attacking midfielder, just offensively, not for the game, but just offensively in that style. Yes. And then you see Schaffelberg kind of drop into the midfield a little bit, into that holding midfield role, but not as the midfielder, just as this position purpose. And then once they're able to get back in their little rotation, you see Yazbek float back into the middle. Then you see Schaffelberg kind of float back out to the right. Nahar kind of trickles in almost as near, I guess I'd say near Hani, and then he makes an underlap run back to the right back position.
Right.
That's just, so they understand their positioning on the field. And even Jacob Schaffelberg mentioned it after the game. You know, he mentioned that I've been working really hard on my positioning on the field. Tape on himself has been vital to study. And I just, that spoke volumes to me, Claudio. That spoke volumes to know that kid is not only maturing as an adult off the field because now he has a baby and so forth, but at the same time, he's maturing on the field. He's understanding and comprehending everything the coaches are giving him. And I just think it was a genius move when they brought him in initially to Nashville, because there was so much upside for the kid. And now that he has a true direction, this is great.
I was just as happy as glad to listen to him saying that, because that really tells us that he wants to become a better player. Mm-hmm. He's aiming at that, and he knows what he needs to do. He's clear. He talks about it all the time, and then he knows this is the part of the game that I need to work, and he's doing it. He looks different now. And now, but going back to what you said about that particular dynamics of Nashville, whenever they might lose the ball up very upfront, especially with the flanks, you know. And I know, as you're right, this is what the team does. The only difference, there's only one difference. They have to be more disciplined this time. Mm-hmm. They have to be more disciplined, because if they miss that, I mean, they might, this team will make him pay. That's just what the way it is, the way New York does. And you know, and you could say, well, any team will do that. Yeah, but how many teams do it with the proper tools? How many teams have the tools to hurt you when you lose the ball away from your own zone?
Not many.
This team does.
They sure do. And that's why I'm so curious about how BJ Callahan approaches this game, because, you know, I think it was Valera that asked, are you going to change the way that you play? I think this was like two or three games ago. It was an away game. Yeah, maybe Real Salt Lake or Seattle game. And BJ was like, no, our identity is to attack. Everybody attacks and everybody defends.
That's the word he used, identity. Identity. Yeah,
the identity. He harps on that every single week. Anybody asked him something similar to that, it is our identity. And we everyone attacks, everyone defends. And it makes me wonder, going into New York here, or New York coming to Nashville, how is BJ Callahan's identity going to face up against this team? Are they really going to attack all the time? Are they really going to defend all the time? Because personally to me, if you're going to do that, and I'm not saying it to a literal sense, but at the same time, you got to make sure that this team understands to be a little bit conservative. And that's something BJ Callahan doesn't like. He does not like that word.
He doesn't like it.
He does not like to be looked at as a conservative coach.
But for this team, for New York, they're gonna have to a level. Mm-hmm. They're gonna have to find an equilibrium somewhere.
They're gonna find a balance.
Yes, they have to find that balance. Otherwise, they're gonna be caught up front and they're gonna suffer. So if they don't find that balance, what they need to do and who leaves behind, then that becomes a problem. I mean, they just have too many weapons, like you said. Now, Nashville does have weapons for sure. I mean, the same thing could happen the other way around. Now, the good thing about it, and what I will say, what needs to happen in order for Nashville to actually take control of the game, hopefully an early goal. That might change a lot of stuff, because New York have to change a little bit. But as long as the game remains tight, Nick, the pressure for both teams in the middle will make that we make up for that boring game that I'm hoping I'm very wrong, and it doesn't happen.
Yeah, and we've seen this too, I'd say, in the last three games or so, give or take. The opportunities other teams have had through Nashville's defensive mistakes. I know today in the press conference, I wasn't in attendance for it, but I listened to it before the podcast, and I think it was Ben Wright that asked the question about just BJ Callahan's overall viewpoint on how the defense has played so far this season. And, you know, I understand BJ's viewpoint on that, but at the same time, you have to look at it as recently. And I understand Ben asked the overview from a season as a whole right now.
Right.
But for me, I look at it as the past three games. We've seen the past three games when Joe Willis is in net, he's kept this team in the game. There have been easily, I could probably count on one hand, maybe two hands, I'd say seven or eight really good chances on net that Joe Willis made a kick save and kept Nashville in the game.
I can't remember two or three in the last one.
Yeah. The Charlotte game, there was probably about three.
Yeah. So, I mean, well, of course, we will say that, and that's probably his task to do stuff like that.
Yeah.
But again, when you have a keeper that's actually saving you too many times, then something's going on.
Yeah, and it also means that that's going to catch up to you in the long run. And hopefully the long run is not deep in the MLS playoffs. Hopefully the long run is, I'd say, either tomorrow or Saturday. Like, you don't want the long run to be after the All-Star break. You're like, oh, no.
You actually want to win, yes.
We're leaking in goals. And that's my biggest concern is to when Walker Zimmerman comes back, will he still be 100%? Will he be able to play 100%? That's my biggest issue. Because if you have a head injury and you're a center back, you use your head a lot to clear out balls, to be aggressive. It's a concerning thing for me.
Wouldn't that depend in his case on how early he actually comes back?
Very true.
I'm talking early, but it's already late.
Yeah,
in my opinion.
Oh, I agree. Late. It's been four or five games now.
Yeah. Yes. And then, we're not talking about only games. How long is it going to take for him to actually get into game shape?
Mm-hmm.
I agree. We're talking about three or four more games, maybe.
It's a concern. I mean,
it's a big concern. Good thing right now is that the two guys in the middle backs are looking strong and healthy. God forbid one of them, something happens to him. I mean, I got to say that I like what I saw from Applewhite.
Uh-huh.
Yes. Yes. Would he be ready to actually take the reins every single game, 90 minutes? I don't think so.
I think
not yet.
The best way to describe Chris Applewhite right now, if I had to go off a progression timeline, remember when Josh Bauer last season filled in at center back and him and Jack Mayer, just really didn't have that right chemistry. I think if you put Applewhite with Jason Palacios right now as like a 1A and a 1B type thing, I think he would struggle like Josh Bauer did last season with Jack Mayer. Is that a fair assessment?
It is. And you know, to be honest with you, if I mean, this is going to sound very stupid, what I'm going to say, but I just say it just because of how I think about what the team has in the bench. It would be better off, Nashville would be better off if either one of them will have to get into get injured. I'm talking about Jason or Mayer, to be Mayer, because then you have Wyatt Myers coming in on that side. But if it is on the other side, where Jason is playing right now, I think we're kind of iffy right there.
Yeah, I agree.
And because of one reason only, because like even BJ said, that Bauer's been training all season long to be a right back. So he's not been practicing all season long to be together with anybody in the defense in the back. So that's what concerns me. Yeah. And I believe in that case, he's gonna have to. Is he going to have to rely on Applewhite then?
So this is how I look at it, Claudio. The tier system of this depth chart when it comes defensively, now that Taylor Washington is injured with his knee injury, and BJ Callahan confirmed it today in the press conference, yes. Wyatt Mayer is the backup left back to Daniel Lovitz, okay? Now, we understand that Wyatt Mayer is a versatile player, can play center back, defensive midfielder, left back, midfielder, box to box if you need it, whatever. But my concern is, Claudio, if you don't have Taylor Washington and you still have Wyatt Meyer as the flex left back backup, say, like you said, God forbid, hopefully this doesn't happen, but say a Jack Mayer goes down or a Jason Palacios goes down, you have to then fit Chris Applewhite in with one or the other if they are not available. And to be honest with you, Claudio, if something doesn't play out right with Chris Applewhite, let's just say theoretically, if things don't pan out for him, which I mean, he's a bright player, but say things are not really gelling for him on the field, then you are forced to put Wyatt Meyer in there. Then the depth is gone. Then you have no depth at that position, defensively across the whole back line, in my opinion.
That's, I mean, we never talked about it before, but it seems like it's, if you look at it that way, it's not thing, but it's not ready.
Right.
It's just not ready. And especially because you, the only guy you train, you're actually training to play in either one of those positions is Applewhite by himself.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you already said it. On the right, he's been using Bauer, right? And the other side is using
Lovitz.
No, I'm talking about the
center back pairings.
The backups.
Oh, I follow you.
Bauer and that's on the right side for Nahar. Yep. On the other side is Wyatt for Lovitz. And there's only one guy in the middle then.
Applewhite.
Can he play both sides? Nope.
No. In my opinion, he'd play the left. In my opinion, I think he played left center back because that's where he's played in weeks past and when he's filled in.
Didn't he play right back in this past game?
Right center back?
I think he did. Well, am I wrong? Who was the center back?
Oh, you're talking about the U.S. Open Cup. Yeah, I think he did. Yeah, I think he did. Yeah.
Because he was pairing with, he paired that with Wyatt.
Yep. And then they had to move Wyatt
and
to left
back. Switch. Yep.
And Jack went in. Yeah.
Right.
That's right.
So.
Yeah. Well, now that I've mentioned that, and that's just DEFCON 5, if that ever does come to happen, I don't think it will, but I had to put it out there. The reason why I don't think it will happen, to be realistic with Nashville SC fans and people that listen to our listeners, is Nashville SC, and we've talked about this, Claudio, the maturity level of this defensive the back line. The defensive back line's maturity and understanding, maybe I don't go in for that tackle. Maybe I don't slide for this ball in the box. You know, stuff like that. They're smart enough, technically sound, to where they know not to make that mistake.
Especially not very close to the area, which is good.
Right.
I mean, most of Nashville fouls coming from those guys are being kind of far into the other field, into their field, the other team's field, which is good because that prevents any free kick or any balls, crossover over inside the area. And that being smart. I mean, if you're going to stop somebody, go ahead and do it early over there. Don't let him just get too close here because that will cause big problems. And they're being smart about not doing that. I mean, the defense in Nashville, as good as it's been, it seems like sometimes it's a step away from, and I agree with you. If that's going to happen, it better happen soon and not later. You know, because later is when it really hurts. When you one game and out.
Exactly. One game and that's it.
that's when it doesn't need to happen.
So
it better happen.
I agree with all those sentiments. I think we've touched on it enough. But going forward with this Nashville SC just side as a whole, I'm curious to know, Claudio, would you be worried in some regard if Nashville, let's say they win this game, right? And then they go into Saturday's matchup and you think, oh man, maybe that was just a little bit of a fluke. DC United's coming into town. Maybe they'll be all right. I mean, that's what I worry about the most is that you go up against a team that's really good in the Eastern Conference and you go up against a team that's near the bottom of the conference in 12th place, like DC United, like not having the best year, 12 points on the season. It's just that's what concerns me. Can Nashville win after having really good competition?
Well, they can, but and the only thing I would say, I used to I think I brought that up in the ever podcast we had or mm-hmm. or I don't know many of our conversations.
It was like the first or second episode.
Yeah. When I was brought to mind that game that I went to cover in Cincinnati when Cincinnati was pretty much flying in first place in the East Conference and I was just there because I like to go and the many friends that I have whatever it is. But the reason wasn't really hoping for anything good from Nashville since they were losing all kinds of games last season, and they beat Cincinnati over there. Everybody was like, wow. I mean, it's like they were saying, well, I mean, we can get beat by anybody but Nashville. That's what they said.
Yeah.
And that happens. And then we come here the next weekend and Nashville loses against the New England, the last place in the East at that time. Timber wasn't playing good at all. And Nashville, I think, I don't remember the score of that game was 2-1 or whatever, or 2-0. I mean, now, having said that, it seems like it didn't happen last time under BJ. Mm-mm. Remember we had that conversation because they went to beat Philadelphia.
They did.
Big there. And then we were talking about the same thing. And they came back again and play against, Real Salt Lake, wasn't it?
Yeah, or Seattle, one of the two.
No, but that wasn't home. It was a home.
Oh, home game.
After Philadelphia, they play home.
I think it was Real Salt Lake. Let me double check for you real fast.
Yeah, check it out because if I'm not mistaken, they came
Montreal,
back here.
Montreal.
And what was the score on that one?
3-0.
Well, you see?
Yeah.
I'm going to say BJ difference. He made the difference because he said, well, that's not going to happen again. We're not going to go out there and beat somebody 3-1, 3-0 and come back here and lose the next game. So that thing has changed. And what I'm using this reference to say that the way I see things now, Nashville, if they win on tomorrow, mm-hmm. they'd be more than ready to beat DC United on Saturday as well.
That's fair. This is a good reference point, too, because you mentioned the Montreal game after the big Philly 3-2 win there. I think BJ Callahan's idea and ideology when it comes to lineup purposes, because he doesn't really give out too much. If I can kind of read a little bit, I could probably get something out of it. But this is kind of what I'm getting at here, Claudio, is that after that Philadelphia game, BJ obviously felt confident in his team that they could win against Montreal. Montreal at the time wasn't great. I think they were like 0-1-4 or something like that. But
Did they fire the coach after that?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
But they ended up putting Josh Bauer at right back, Johnny Perez at that attacking right midfielder role, Gaston Brugman at right center mid, and then the rest of it was all the same lineup as usual. Tagseth, Meyer, Lovitz, Moyle, Surridge, Mukhtar, all the above. But it makes me think that's what BJ Callahan's going to do. I'm not saying exactly that lineup, but I'm saying he's going to... I mean, I'm torn between either Tagseth or Yazbek to be substituted out for Brugman. I think more than likely it will be Tagseth out, Brugman in, and then pair him with, I don't know.
Starting, you mean? Brugman starting?
Yeah. Yeah.
Sounds interesting.
Yeah. I would like to see Brugman start again. I think he was serviceable the last time he started. I just think Tagseth needs a little bit of extra... A little extra off the field a little bit. I think he needs to give a little rest.
I see him starting on against DC, but not this team.
Tagseth?
No, I'm talking about the
Brugman. So you see him starting?
I'm starting against DC, taking the place of one of those two guys. But against this team right here, he's going to go with the four that we talked about earlier. I mean, they just can't afford to have problems in the middle at all.
That's what I'm saying. I think BJ Callahan's approach to all these games, especially in the midweek games, if they're teams in the top eight or top nine or top 10, I'd go top nine. I wouldn't go 10. I'd say if they're teams in the top nine contention of getting a playoff spot, or they're in a playoff realm of a possibility.
Right.
I think he goes with his ace in the hole starting 11. That's, including Yazbek and Tagseth in the middle. And you're bringing out all the big guns. I think that's what he does for those games.
Yeah.
And then 2-3 days later, he's going to have a B team. Now, I'm not saying like a U.S. Open Cup style, but a B team as in Josh Bauer at right back. Maybe Wyatt Meyer, because we all know how good he is. Maybe he starts at left
back. Maybe Corcoran.
Or Matt Corcoran starts in the midfield. Corcoran. You're right, your guy. Corkscrew.
Yeah. That's his nickname. Yeah,
Corkscrew Corcoran. He's always in the midfield.
He's my hero. You know, talking about that, and maybe I'm making a parenthesis here right. before I forget. I remember we were talking about, and I introduced you, my brother-in-law, Roberto, today on the phone. And after we finished talking, and we were just messing, all of us are there, he said, you know, I have a question for you. And then he said, well, send it to me. Well, I'll take it to the podcast and discuss it with Nick. He said, why doesn't, it's a good question. You know, and maybe it's better to try to find answers for that, us together. Uh-huh. And maybe the fans have answers, which we haven't thought about, maybe. But he say, I mean, every time Johnny Perez comes in, he seems to give the team a lot of good minutes. Why doesn't he play more? You know, it is a good question, because the easy answer is well, I mean, who he is replacing when he comes in at 1 minute, and what he brings to the table would... And then again, would Nashville be better off if he comes and play at 10 more minutes? You know, I mean, at 60 minutes, at 65. I don't know. I mean, it's kind of a tough one, isn't it?
Yeah, it is a tough one. But also, I think what you said about the 65th minute, I think using him as a super sub, kind of like Ahmed Kasem a little bit, if you use those guys as super subs, because let's be honest, Claudio, and you can attest to this too. We've talked a little bit about how Ahmed Kasem struggles a little bit defensively.
He does.
And even Jacob Schaffelberg mentioned, not about Ahmed Kasem, but he's talked about how he's been working on his defensive skills, especially coach has been working hard with him on that. I think that gives Schaffelberg an upper leg, but also back to the main point about Johnny Perez and Ahmed Kasem, the similarities I see in their game is they struggle a little bit defensively. They're very good offensively. They can possess the ball well. I think the only knock I would have on Johnny Perez is, I don't know. I mean, he could go a full 90. We've seen it. U.S. Open Cup, we've seen it.
Oh, he can go.
We know he has the stamina for it, but I think he's good enough for MLS play to be in the realm of 65 minutes. I mean, if they needed 45 minutes, I think they get a good 45 minutes. But I think the lack of defensive skill for him catches up to him if they keep him in too long.
I agree. I mean, you know, that brings up another question when you talk about those two guys especially. I mean, are they better for you if you're actually in control of the game in terms of the score? Are they the type of players that could come in there and perhaps really change the game where you're not having when you're lacking the offensive power you need maybe to get over the hump? I mean, what I'm still at odds with that, to be honest, Nick. I'm not sure when is a good time to bring him in. To be honest, I'm not sure. If you have to have the ball, the game in control for them to come in, then, you know, well, I mean, that would be an insult for those guys, to be honest with you. I mean, if you think I can only come in here whenever the team is winning and perhaps beating the other team and just get somebody a rest, no. I don't. That'll be the first one telling you, no, that's not the way it is. But in order to be the other way, which I'm leaning towards, they really need more minutes.
I agree.
They really do need more minutes. That's the only way. I mean, that's the only way we can. How is it going to improve both of them, the defensive part of their game? Well, they have to play.
And I also
simple as that.
About the Ahmed Kasem situation, because I think Jonathan Perez has proved his worth. Let's put it that way. He's proved his worth. I think Ahmed Kasem, I guess initially to Nashville fans, I felt like he proved his worth very, very fast because of the back-to-back goals he had, especially coming off the bench and one, you know, and so forth.
Yeah, yeah.
But to me, I think the best way for Ahmed Kasem to get minutes, especially in MLS play or just with the top team, you have to start him in the U.S. Open Cup. I think that's your only way for him to truly get valuable minutes because, one, the value of competition in the U.S. Open Cup, it's not MLS standards. Now, they are going to be taking on Orlando SC next round, which is an MLS club. So, I mean, that's going to be a tough game. But I think that's where you might have to start putting in a guy like Ahmed Kasem to get minutes. And also, not only just for the minutes point, but to build up his confidence level. Because when a player doesn't get a lot of minutes, we all know what happens. The confidence level, and this happens a lot in European soccer. You know this. Confidence level goes from here down to here, very low. And they say, coach, I don't want to play. I need you to trade me. I need to go to another team. The winter transfer window, get me out of here. Tell my agent.
And this conversation we're having about those two guys, we could add some others, but this main two guys, I guess the reason I bring it up, and not only because my brother-in-law was asking me about, but I think it's a conversation worth to have, because if it seems to me like this time Nashville is going to go back to the playoffs.
Oh, yeah.
Now, one thing is to go back to the playoffs. Another thing is to really have a shot. Go far into the playoffs.
Yeah.
And I believe myself, this is my opinion, that the only way you can actually go far into the playoffs if you have really, really guys that can actually come and give you not only good minutes.
Serviceable minutes.
Serviceable minutes, correct. And longer minutes, mm-hmm. not just the last 10 or 15. No, you're going to need to have some guy, one of these or the two of them or no, I don't know how many, who come in there and actually give you 35, 40 good minutes, because you never know what's going to happen. I mean, you're hoping and praying that everybody stays healthy all the way through the playoffs. But if something really goes the other way around, you're going to need one of those two guys to come and say, hey, don't worry. I mean, I might be the same style, I might be him, whatever, but I'm here and I can do this and better. Well, yeah. That's the answer we're expecting from those guys still. But, boy, I go back to my point. How are we going to see that if they don't play more minutes?
Exactly. And that, to my point about Ahmed Kasem, like, let me just clarify this. I wasn't using Ahmed Kasem as an example, say, oh, get him out of here, winter transfer.
No,
I'm just saying in European soccer in general, just to clarify that. But you're right, Claudio, they need serviceable minutes. And honestly, I think Nashville SC players that don't get a lot of minutes, and when they do get their time, and like you're saying, maybe 40, 45 good minutes, make it a purpose to say, man, give me those 45 minutes. And as for media members like us, that gives us the I guess, opportunity to ask, well, you put in XYZ player who has got a good amount of minutes, but not quite enough, but you put him in at halftime. You made the halftime substitution. That's the kind of team you need to have.
Yes.
You need to have the team where you're making those, do I sub this guy in or out at the 45th minute to go into the second half? That's the kind of team you need. And I think Nashville has that team. I just think they're not fully there yet. They're mature. They're maturing as this season progressed, but they're not quite there.
Because you know how that discourse from most coaches, and I mean, BJ, I love BJ, to be honest with you, but he doesn't stay away from the same discourse in some things, you know. We have all these players, we train the same way, we play the same way, we practice the same way so that they will be ready when they are called upon, mm-hmm. when the test comes. But that's not really the truth at the end of the day. That's not really the truth.
I mean, he's got a game plan for every one of them.
That's right. And not only that, we know that we've seen soccer, we follow soccer enough minutes, enough days, enough years already to find out, to know that usually when a guy becomes an answer, a really good answer off the bench, is one guy that is usually adding more and more minutes through the year. I mean, if you keep a guy, anybody, I'm not going to say any name, only playing the last 15 minutes of a game, I don't see you're going to be much progress in terms of competition. No. I mean, he might come in there like you can say Kasem come and score two goals off the bench. But that didn't happen anymore. No. He stopped right there. So
we saw it last year with Brian Anunga, 15 minutes here and there.
And then that never developed to anything else, did it?
Mm-mm, it did not. And look where he's at now. Don't get me wrong. Good guy, great player, but he's on another team now.
Yeah.
Well, think of it that way.
I got to think it that way. That's exactly right. I don't know if Brian would have make it better if he played more, but we still have the doubt. He might have.
Yeah, that's true.
He might have. I mean, if you're going to play him anyways, give him some more minutes every time.
Yeah, you're right.
Because I do remember one of the last the games that he played when he was actually starting for Nashville. He didn't look better, a lot better.
He did.
Ryan did. He's a good example.
Well, you know who else is a good example, Claudio, that we have not got to yet? We always seem to forget to talk about him.
Who's that?
Hani Mukhtar.
Well, I didn't forget about him today.
You didn't. What went on today at the press conference, Claudio? What did you ask BJ Callahan?
Well, you know, and this is a question I kept forgetting, because anytime a game is over, we do ask questions about the game. I like to ask questions about the game, of course. Otherwise, I feel like, well, why did I watch the game if I don't have anything to ask him about it?
Right.
So this is a question that, if you remember that one time that we have Hani Mukhtar, he told us on press conference that he had a meeting with Vijay.
He did.
And we would have loved, we even said that thing that you said, being the
fly on the wall.
The fly on the wall. We would have loved to be the fly on the wall and listen to whatever went on that conversation. But of course, Hani didn't say much. And I started my question that way, asking, I knew Vijay wasn't going to give me anything either. However, I did ask him if that conversation had something to do with the fact or some about the way Hani, and we discussed this also, the way Hani is playing more as a 9 today, no, as a 10 today, that he was trying to do play as a 9 under Gary and maybe at the beginning of BJ's cycle. And that's what that's the kind of question I asked, and he answered very nicely.
Yeah, I think it starts from our overall ethos that everyone attacks, everyone defends. And so, you know, we've challenged Hani, and to be quite honest, Hani's challenged himself to contribute to this team in all phases of play. And so, yeah, I think we, you know, however you want to identify his position, he's a player that we want to get on the ball. We want him to be able to run it back lines. We want him to be able to make final passes. When the opportunity is there to score, we want him to score. When the opportunity is there to make the extra pass to set your teammate up for a goal who might be in a better position, we want him to make that decision too. All with the same thing is, you know, he's also without the ball. You know, he's doing a great job, you know, leading our defensive line, him and Sam, applying pressure, starting to build pressure. So I think what you've seen is Hani really commit to becoming, you know, committed to all phases of the game.
So there you go, Claudio. He mentioned it right there.
Isn't it hard to believe, Nick, that conversation had nothing to do with that, what he answered today? We talked about it before. I don't think, even after a conversation between Hani and Gary, that would happen.
Oh, I agree.
No, it wouldn't. Because he was the one that dictated the game at this point. Not BJ. I mean, I understand. And I believe that BJ is one of those guys that actually tries to convince instead of saying, I'm the boss. I don't think he's that type. But he has a way of doing it. And you can tell.
Yeah.
Because he even says, Hani's doing this and this and this and this now.
He's a stern coach. I mean, I don't know how else to describe him. He is a stern coach. He has a way of doing things, and it's not Hani's way or the highway. It's BJ Callahan's way or the highway. I mean, think about that. That is it. I think so. I think I will say I think star players on this Nashville SC team, as in a Hani Mukhtar or a Sam Surridge, I think they carry a little bit more weight when it comes to decision making. With BJ Callahan and his coaching staff, but at the same time, it's still BJ Callahan's way or the highway.
Especially because this is, after all, and it would always be a collective game.
Mm-hmm.
There's other 10 or 9 more guys playing the game that in that particular moment, and the coach is the only one that thinks about all of them and what they can do all put together. No coach should worry about any type of other thing that is not game type collective effort. There's no way. If you go the other way, you're wrong, in my opinion. So, I mean, and he's right. His answer is, I like his answer because it's telling exactly what's going on now. I mean, the fact that Hani Mukhtar decided and compromised to do what he's doing now, that's a change, isn't it?
It is. It's showing that, I hate to use the word maturity again, but at the same time, I'll use it this way. I think he's adjusting. He's adjusting properly as a professional to BJ Callahan's system. That's a better way to put it than to say maturing.
I liked it. I loved it. Exactly. I mean, we're talking about the similar stuff that we talked about Jacob Chaffee a few minutes earlier.
Right.
Exactly. A guy maturing on his game, knowing and finally accepting what he's lacking and doing something about it.
And two, like at the beginning of the season, in preseason, I believe it was Valera that asked the question how Hani has multiple citizenships and he has some aspirations of playing international soccer for a nation, if it's Germany, Saudi, I believe it's what, the UAE, right? Is that right?
Yeah, Saudi Arabia.
Saudi Arabia.
Is that what it's from? I thought it was something. Well, no. What was the team? It was a. I'm confused now. Yeah, it was a team that came calling his name.
In Qatar.
I can't remember what he wanted.
Yeah, club team in Qatar, I believe.
Yeah.
But like he's in one of those nationalities, and you have to remember too, like, also, could he play for the U.S. national team if that were to come across? You know what I mean? Like, end up getting a U.S. citizenship to play for the U.S. national team. Like, he has options. But the reason why I bring this up, Claudio, is that preseason he had aspirations to play at an international level. So, you know, if you're an international coach and you're one of those three or four nations that Hani Mukhtar follows under, you're thinking, I mean, he doesn't have the same production. If he's a true number 10, he's not getting the same goal production, the same assist production. People, I guess coaches look at it as more of the numbers game. But at the same time, he is producing at a very high level, just not on the ball. And I think that fits BJ Callahan's system very well. Unfortunately, he's one of the more marketable players that's not scoring a lot of goals. But when he does score, he makes sure you know who scores.
That's exactly right. I mean, I believe if any chances that he might have of doing what you described very well, playing for a national team, it will never be at this point, no matter how many options he's got, it will never be as a prolific goal scorer that national team is looking for.
Yeah.
They already have him. They already have him. All of them, even the U.S. Even the U.S. has already the goal scorer. The only one I can think of right now that right now off the bat that I could actually, he's been done already, that I can think of pushing the envelope a little bit is Brian White from Vancouver. He's the only one. Besides that, the other guys are already that part of the system. No matter what coach brings in the U.S. teams already is then their names are already there.
Mm-hmm.
That's for sure. So now, if you talk about somebody who's gonna do what Hani does now, build game, assist, make other players look good,
create
he can
space.
Do that very,
yeah,
he can do that very nicely. He's showing to me again. I'm gonna say it as many times as I need to say it, probably in every podcast. The Hani today, I like it better.
I agree.
I like it better. A lot better.
It shows.
And if I get to talk to him, I'll tell him.
Yeah.
Yes.
He's a true team player. You're absolutely right. I think once he understood that himself and his game, I think that's when it clicked for him. And it doesn't seem he's as, I mean, we still see it from time to time. You and I, we chatter back and forth about this. But like when everybody's on the score sheet and Hani Mukhtar's not on the score sheet, we can kind of see when he's forcing things on the field, you know?
He's going to kind of try to do a couple of, see what he can make, right?
Yeah.
He's still tempted to do it.
He goes back to his old ways a few times, you know? When he has the opportunities, he kind of goes back to his old ways sometimes.
Yeah.
But overall, that's that on Hani Mukhtar. And, you know what, Claudio, let's wrap up with this. Let's go a little bit of some, not English class, but Callahanese. You want to learn another language, Claudio?
Sure. Hey, yeah. Why not? I'm always
you know English, you know Spanish. How about you know a third language? Callahanese. Brian Callahanese. You know,
all right. Let's see what that is.
This is a part of his vocabulary now, Claudio. Let me rephrase this for
you. So you become what? You're becoming an artificial intelligence on life right now or what?
No, I'm just trying to understand Brian Callahan a little bit more. You know, I think, BJ Callahan. I'm all up on the Titans, Brian Callahan. This is BJ Callahan, excuse me. BJ Callahan. He's got this vocabulary that is well-versed in some regard. You know, when Brian Acosta and Gaston Brugman were out, and I've mentioned this in previous podcasts, it'll be a few weeks. He said it'll be, they're well off. Yeah, they're like well off, well away. And that meant 3 to 4 weeks. Well, with Taylor Washington, he said, Taylor will be out for a couple weeks, or he'll be out for a little bit of time. He said he'll be out for a little bit of time. I think that's what it was. It was a knee injury. And then I think it was Ben Wright at the end of the press conference that asked him, what's the status on Walker as well? And just take a listen to what BJ Callahan had to say about Walker Zimmerman after he mentioned Taylor Washington's injury.
Knee injury, and Walker is the same status as he's been.
Did you hear that? He went same status. He caught himself. I've told you
previous
podcasts.
Think he's
going to
say same status quo?
Bingo. Yo, look at you. You've caught on just fine. No need to give you a lesson.
Sometimes I do that. Sometimes I do that.
I mean, come on now, Claudio. No. I'm not trying to jab at BJ Cowell.
If I had enough coffee, I might do that sometimes.
There you go. I'm not trying to jab or make fun of the situation at all about BJ Callahan. Well, I guess we're having a little bit of fun, but it's nothing out of malice. It's no ill will on it. But it's funny. He goes, oh, it's the same status, you know, it's the same status. Same set. Not status quo. Because we all know what status quo means. It's week to week. And I guess status quo is week to week. It's going to be week to week. And if it's week to week up until the All-Star break, Nashville's in a big problem.
Wow. So you'd rather believe the word he used or the one that we're thinking he wanted to say? What would you rather take?
I would rather take him saying status quo. Just give me status quo, just for the fun of it. I'll rather him say okay. It's status quo. Just give me.
So he made a mistake.
Yeah, he made a slight mistake.
He made an English mistake.
He did. He ended up not using Callahanese and he used regular English. That's a tisk tisk. BJ Callahan can't be doing that now. Can't be doing that. I appreciate you listening to the podcast though, because you caught yourself.
That's right.
Yeah, I think we're the only people in Nashville that kind of put that out on the board there. Hey, whoa, BJ Callahan said it's status quo once again. There you go.
Well, hey. We said it.
Thanks,
BJ.
Appreciate you listening. You can always just share this with other people if you'd like. Much appreciated.
You can always come live with us as well.
Yeah, you're more than welcome to hop on the podcast anytime. Absolutely.
Sure.
Claudio, is there anything we missed that we'll be kind of missing going forward, because we have the game tomorrow, Wednesday, going into New York. They play Nashville here. And then Saturday, former Nashville SC player Randall Leal comes back to Nashville. And it's against DC United. I will not be at that game. I have a personal appearance I have to make at a function. So
is that a wedding?
Yes. Yeah. Claudio knows I've been going to a handful of weddings in the last year.
Gosh.
So this is a wedding gathering. It's not the actual wedding, but it's a gathering for the wedding. So
because of Valer and Arsenal, I don't bet anymore.
Wager. Yeah. Friendly wagers.
I never did anymore. I never did before then. I'm not going to do it anymore after that. But if I was going to get into that stuff again, I'd probably make a big bet with anybody who knows you that you're probably the guy that goes to more weddings in Nashville in a year.
Oh, no.
Come on now.
Listen, I'm in my mid-20s. All my friends are getting married. I can't help it, man. I'm a dedicated hard worker. That's all I am. But this is one of those things where I'm like, listen.
Well, I'll tell you what.
Okay.
While you're in the wedding, I hope you have a good time with your friends and everything. Of course I do. But when you're there, I'm drinking a cup of coffee with a couple of good cookies watching the game at Yoda's Park.
Okay.
What about that?
Well, please send me a nice picture and just tell everybody I'm sorry I'm not there. I just can't help it. I mean, I will say I may make a cameo appearance in the press conference via Zoom. I might. I just might.
Okay.
So
we'll
just
see.
Forewarning you, I'm just might. If you hear...
I'm happy to know that you don't drink. Otherwise, I'd be worried.
Yeah, if you hear Sean say...
You're cutting from the wedding a little tipsy, no?
No, it's not like that. No. All you got to worry about is when you get to the press conference and you hear, okay, we're going to go to the Zoom. Nick, Frazier, what do you have for a question? And then I go say my question. I'm like, Claudio, I told you I'd make it. And then BJ's like, what are you guys talking about? Oh, sorry, we're talking Callahanese. Sorry about that. Excuse me.
Oh my gosh.
But yeah, that...
You know, the one last piece that you asked me about to finish the podcast today, well, even though I have nothing to say against the game of Zurich at this point, well, he needs to go, even after the four goals, he needs to come back into the score sheet this week, tomorrow.
Yeah, Super Sam has to really show up. You're right. So what is your score prediction for tomorrow?
Tomorrow, like we said, I mean, I'm not going to be contradicting myself, but I still think Nashville has the edge here by one goal.
Oh.
Well, nothing to one, whatever, but it's going to be one goal. I wouldn't mind seeing a 3-2 game. Why not? It's always nice to see goals, to get scores.
I am, at the beginning of the podcast, I said, well, 1-0 or 1-1, it has that vibe. I don't know. I could see Nashville scoring two goals, but I don't know if Nashville can hold Forsberg or Choupo-Moting to no goals. So as much as this is a high-scoring affair in my brain, I want to say 2-1. Does that sound a little too far-fetched? a little bit?
No. Why? No, I mean, it's possible. It's possible. Yeah. Why not? I mean, you know, and I mean, well, I mean, look, if you go back to, we go back to our thoughts before the game against Charlotte, because of what happened over there. Mm-hmm. I mean, a 2-1 was a kind of a risky proposition.
Yeah.
Because they are a very good team. Well, this is a very good team as well. And Nashville took care of business.
Yeah.
And Saturday.
Then we saw when Nashville could score quick like that. So, yeah. Right.
Why wouldn't they be able to take care of business tomorrow? I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, that's true. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I'll go with Nashville winning 2-1. Or no, excuse me. I say Nashville wins 2-0. 2-0.
Of course.
2-0. Sam Surge gets a goal. And this is a tough one, Claudio. I'm going to go Sam Surge. And I'm going to go Andy Nahar.
Well, I'm going to go Sam Surridge both.
Oh. Oh. How about that? A brace for Sam Surridge.
Yes, sir. I want him to keep hot, to keep warm, stay hot.
Okay.
Stay on it. Yep.
Well, everybody listening, you heard Claudio say it. Nashville has
Sam Surridge. Of the good guys anyways, you know. Yeah. Why not?
That's right. That's right. And you know, since we won't be on the podcast for the DC game, give me a prediction for the DC game.
The DC game, well, that could be, if the way things look, I can only do it by that way, because we're not going to have, we haven't watched tomorrow's game, of course.
Right.
But the way it's looking right now, I'm going to see Nashville clear 3-1 right there.
Yeah.
Even 3-0.
I think Nashville gets back-to-back clean sheets. I have a feeling that the whole Joe Willis thing of, you know, having to really have this team leak in goals from left and right, I think he gets back-to-back clean sheets. So 2-0 tomorrow night on Wednesday against the Red Bulls, and then Saturday against DC. You said what, 3-1?
3-1, yeah. It could be 3-0. I just know it's going to be a five goal week for Nashville.
I'm going to go 4-0.
Wow.
4-0. I think Sam Surge gets 2 goals. I think Jason Palacios gets a goal. And I say Hani Mukhtar gets the last goal.
Okay.
So Sam Surridge, Hani Mukhtar, or two from Sam Surridge, Hani Mukhtar, and Jason Palacios.
I'm gonna go with either Nahar or Lobitz.
Okay.
Adding, because I want the defense.
Uh-huh.
And then I'm gonna go in the middle of the field. I'm gonna take Jaspic this time. Jaspic. I haven't taken them once. Jaspic, and I'm gonna go Hani Mukhtar with the third.
Yeah, I think Hani's due. Hani is due for a goal here. If it's not Wednesday, it's Saturday.
Yeah, he's gonna score this week.
Oh yeah. I agree. Yeah, I think the way BJ has been talking about him in press conferences, for sure. Well, Claudio, that's all we got for this episode of the podcast. If anybody out there that listens to the Talking Calcio podcast, you can find it on the Game Nashville Sports Network. You can find myself, Nick Frazier 23, on Twitter. You can also find Claudio Villalobos on Facebook, Twitter, at Nashville Total Sports. If you have any questions for us, you can reach out to Nashville Total Sports on my personal Twitter account, Nick Frazier 23, or the Game Nashville Sports Network at 1025 The Game. One or the other, any options, you're more than welcome to go reach out. If you have a question, we'll get back to you on that, and we'll read it on the podcast, just like this past week with Roberto. So thank you guys very much for listening to the Talking Calcio podcast on the Game Nashville Sports Network, and we'll see you on the next episode. Peace.
Hasta luego.
Ci vediamo.